Today we're at Fen Farm Dairy in Bungay, Suffolk, England, to see how Byron Bagot cheese is made. This cheese has such an interesting story. There is so much passion and hard work behind it, and it's so much more than a British brie or a brie style cheese made in Britain, even though I know I got you with that headline. Today we're going to meet with Mark. He's the head cheese maker here. He's going to show us how the cheese is made. And then we're going to meet with Johnny. He's the farmer here at Fen Farm Dairy, and he's the one who created Byron Bagot, who decided to make this cheese. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, why he decided to make a brie style cheese, why here in Suffolk, and all the lessons that he learned along the way. Where it's time to find cover because it's pouring and I can't wait to get into the dairy to see how Byron Bagot is made. Let's go.
The day starts here, from these vats, each holding 200 liters of milk. The milk is arriving in this room already mixed with starter cultures that help acidify it, as well as other maturing cultures, including the two famous molds that are so distinct in soft cheeses, like Byron Bagot, Brie and Camembert. Geotricum is a mold that gives the cheese these brain-like wrinkles, and Penicillium gives it this fluffy white coating. The molds are not visible at this stage. We'll talk about them a bit more in detail later in the maturing rooms with Mark.
What we're hoping is, by the time we fill all these vats here, the milk will be the right acidity for us to rennet. At this stage, pH and temperature are critical, really.
Okay.
Once we've got the milk out here, all we can do to control the milk temperature is the room temperature. So it's kind of all timing at this stage, really. We don't want to be waiting too long for our acidity to drop. The end result of that will be really the curd, the way that the curd drains. So what happens now in the vats is really affecting what's happening in the molds and the cheese texture and flavor later on.
Yeah, so it's very important to get it right now because you can't correct.
Yeah, it's very important to get it right now. It very much has a big effect on the texture further down the line.
Byron Bagot comes in two sizes, 3 kilos and 1 kilo. Today, Mark and his team are working with 5,200 liters of milk and will make 130 of the big wheels and 400 of the small ones. Milk is now acidifying and Mark is waiting to add rennet.
So every morning you take your shot. Every morning you take your shot of rennet.
Yeah, it doesn't taste very nice.
Honestly.
We did have someone who accidentally did drink some rennet here once.
Oh, what does it taste like?
Well, Johnny was explaining about tasting some of the milk, and he had some milk in a little jug, and there was a group of people there, and one of the people thought that he meant drink the rennet, so she drank some of the rennet, and she's... I have tasted it, yeah, it's... Yeah, it's hard to explain, really,
But then if you drink milk before that, would you have your stomach starts to curdle?
Yeah, you would coagulating in your stomach, yeah. Extra quick, yeah.
That's so good.
So it's quite a therapeutic part of the day, really.
Yeah.
Sort of gently stirring these in.
Yeah, go for an operation here.
8 to 9 minutes after adding rennet, Mark checks how the curd looks to see how long it has to rest before cutting it. He calls this the flocculation time.
You said it has to be grainy, yeah.
Yeah, just with experience, you'll start to the milk feels slightly thicker. So it's very quick. So you see it now, it's starting to go grainy, and you can just see the milk solidified, and there you go, it's gone. So now,
okay.
There you go, you've now got like a gel.
Today the wait is going to be an additional 45 minutes.
At that point, we'll know that our curd strength, going by experience, is the right firmness. We don't want the curd to be too firm, that we're tearing it whilst we're cutting it, but
yeah.
We also don't want it to be too soft, that the curd is breaking. To damage the curd at that stage will affect texture later on and the way that the whey is released.
The milk is now ready to be cut. Mark uses a custom-made tool that cuts straight into the vat.
So at the moment, you've got like this checkerboard of long prongs. if we say wanted to speed up the drainage at this point, how quickly this would release whey, what we could do is we could cut these columns smaller. If we wanted to slow it down, slow down the amount of moisture that is coming out here, the whey, we could cut them bigger.
After cutting, there is more wait time. The curd is going to stay for another hour and 30 minutes to drain its whey. Now it's time for one of the most delicate steps of the cheesemaking process, hand ladling, to fill the molds by hand.
The acidity is good, our temperature is good. So basically, we check the curd to see whether we're set to ladle, and we can do that by really giving the curd a bounce in your hands. We're looking for a nice bouncy texture, something that isn't going to split when it hits some molds. So it's a good time to really test the curd. It really comes with experience. You really get to know the right sort of strength of the curd. Generally, if you can bounce the curd like this and it doesn't break, you're in a good place. What we don't want to happen is it breaking when it hits some molds here. If the curd was to be breaking like this, that would be great, because basically the drainage and you wouldn't keep the right moisture. You'd end up with a very solid, horrible cheese. Like what we're looking for is the lovely texture. So we want a good, so this is good. So I'd say that this is ready to ladle. As soon as we get all these weighed off, we will we'll begin.
And so what are you using to ladle? What's
so these are a pellebri. So this is like a traditional ladle, really. So if you can imagine, we cut this earlier with our cheese harp. So we've got these long prongs, basically. And what we're doing with the pellebri is skimming across the top to take off even cube sizes. So what we're trying to do is keep the surface of this vat level.
And then the ladle is also cutting the curd at the same time.
It's cutting the curd, so it's cutting cubes. So what we're trying to do is keeping this as flat as possible. If we were to just dig in one position in here, the curd would all fold in on itself and it'd be really hard to get a nice consistent size. We work quite swiftly through this because basically the curd is draining whey as we ladle. So the sooner we can get the curd into the hoops, the better, really.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, it does need to go in there with care. We don't want to be smashing the curd into the hoops. What you have to do is make a slight adjustment as we go down our line of molds here. So as we get closer to the end, we'll ladle slightly less. And that's to make up for the curd draining as we ladle.
Mark and the team ladle the curd into two hoops for the big 3 kilo wheels and three hoops for the small cheeses. This will gradually be removed as the whey drains out of the cheese.
If you can imagine, our finished cheese is about so big here. So that's how much they'll drain between now and the morning.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so they're gonna drain a lot. I mean, we're gonna remove this hoop before the first turn. So in about an hour's time from now, we're gonna have a cheese which is so big.
Although Mark makes ladling look so effortless, let me tell you, it is not. The curd needs to be kept as flat as possible and the ladle is not light. I'm taking a shot for the team meaning me and you watching, to demonstrate how hard it is.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, just give it a... So maybe go up this bit here now.
Okay.
You can cut into it a little bit more, but that's fine.
Sorry. It's all right.
That's it, that's it.
Yeah. Good?
Yeah, yeah.
Good size? Yeah, okay.
So we'll move.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah, you never know, because then you said if I go too far, it becomes too thick.
Yeah, I mean, like, you've just got to do your best, really. Like, so what I would do here now is go up this end, because if not, you'll get these holes here, like where you've sort of dug at it. So it's kind of... So it's quite a technique to it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also, like, you need a big wrist for that. Like,
it's kind of like a...
Wrist.
Yeah, rotate your wrist around.
Yeah.
Or, You'll find your own.
My hands are too skinny to do it.
You'll find your own sort of technique, really. Yeah,
okay. I will. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The cheeses will be turned 4 times today. The first turn is done directly after ladling, and the following 3 will be over the course of the day, with the last one at 9 p.m. this evening. The final mold will be removed tomorrow, when the cheese is strong enough to hold its shape. At 1 day old, once out of the mold, the cheeses are salted twice, first by hand and then by machine.
So we make adjustments to the machine of how much salt we want to go on the face of the cheese, depending on the moisture of the cheese. But what you can see happening here is where the cheese has been salted on one side already, the whey is starting to release. So you've got like this whey pooling on top. So George is turning them, and then we'll be salting the other side.
The cheeses spend their first few days in this maturing room at a mild temperature to kickstart the ripening process. At this stage, none of the molds we added at the start are visible. Mark says you usually start seeing some signs around day 3, but it's important to turn the cheeses regularly, like George is doing here, to avoid the whey sitting on the cheese for too long.
What that would create is like a damp surface for the rind. And then what we find is happens, the geotrichum likes the higher moisture. So we would get this patchy geotrichum and the penicillium won't grow. So we'll get these wet patches.
Yeah, you can see all the whey still coming out.
That's it.
From the holes here.
And like, so these cheeses here, so the large size cheeses, this is always a good sign here, like when you can see almost like the curd structure. So this is the actual curd pieces. And if we've got a good curd strength and texture, when the curd is going into the molds, what will happen is the cubes will stay as they are. So it really affects the overall texture of the cheese here. Yeah. That's really telling us that, you know, the curd is nice and strong, and you'll be able to see later on, when the cheese is maturing, it almost has like a feathery, like crumbly texture to the center. We don't want to see like a solid curd. It is a technique to it, so you have to adjust, you have to be able to adjust the cheeses when they're quite fragile, so that is quite a skill in itself, because they will want to slope in the molds. But what we don't want to happen is we don't want the cheeses to be split or broke at all.
Yeah.
So there's quite a skill in the adjustment to get this straightness.
So these cheeses, how old are they?
This cheese is yesterday's cheese.
Okay. Yeah. It's already very yellow.
Yeah. By 12 hours, you really have got quite a set cheese.
In the first week, cheeses are turned every other day, and in the second, every 3 days. After a couple of days, the cheeses move to the second maturing room, which is colder than the first one.
How many cheeses do you think there are in here, in this room?
In here? How many batches have we got? 1, 2, 3, 3 or 4 thousand.
Nice. Yeah.
So it's more of a cave-like environment. You can see there's lots of moisture in here. We've got nice humidity, and basically, we've got all the different aged cheeses here. So we've got cheeses ranging from a few days to nearly 2 weeks. On these cheeses here, you can see just the first signs of the penicillium. So that's a white mold growing here.
So here you don't see the geotrichum yet?
The geotrichum, you can see it. It's not so evident here. It's the wrinkles underneath, basically. So on these smaller cheeses here, you can see these, it's like a brain-like texture here.
Okay.
So this is a geotrichum. They're both kind of playing their role in developing the rind, and they're gonna both with that bring flavor and texture to the rind as well. So what we're looking for really is like an even texture. We're looking for a nice mixture of the geotrichum and the penicillium. So it's kind of it's getting that balance, so that this is where the salting comes into play. If we had cheeses which had too much salt on, what we'd see is an abundance of the white mold and not much geotrichum. And it's kind of vice versa, really. If we had undersalted cheese, what we'd see happening is the geotrichum would really flourish and the Penicillium would really struggle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Penicillium, the white mold, likes dry. It likes more of a dry surface to grow in, whereas the Geotrichum likes moisture.
Mm-hmm.
On these cheeses here, we've got a little bit too much, maybe, Geotrichum mm-hmm. here. We're looking for something more like these cheeses here. So maybe this is just slightly undersalted here. There's definitely like subtle signs as well that we can tell in the cheese at this age where the cheese might be going in the weeks to come. We always like to see there's kind of this like almost like ripply, wavy effect on the rind. And that's always a good sign. That's saying that there's generally that there's a nice moisture level in the cheese. When we have like a dry cheese, it tends to be very sort of flat, and these will be nice cheeses. So we've got a nice 3 kilo cheese here. It's a nice mixture on this cheese. You've got a nice bloomy Penicillium candididium there, and you've got the Geotrichum just kind of underneath. So it's like the mixture we're looking for. It's almost like the Geotrichum is kind of under the PC, and it's just a nice blend.
How long the cheeses age here depends on the customer's preferences. Mark says his sweet spot is between 6 to 8 weeks.
I like it with still a slight chalkiness in the centre of the cheese. So you've got this nice creamy breakdown and like a nice feathery centre. Mm-hmm. That's very sort of stereotypical of Baron Bygaard. Some people, they like the cheese to be like really mature and totally broken down, don't they? So it's just like a paste.
So how many people does one serve?
What, a large cheese like this? Well, these weigh 3 kilos, so it depends, yeah, how much cheese you can eat, but I mean, it's...
Yeah, I like that there is no...
yeah, there's no...
There's just no indication.
There's no limit, yeah. I mean, I can easily demolish the small camembert size.
Yeah.
I think it is a characteristic of Baron to be eaten with a slight chalk line in the middle.
Yeah.
Obviously, the more you mature this, by 8 to 10 weeks, this is going to fully break down, isn't it? But this is always a good sign when you can see the curd structure.
And interesting, like it's just been cut like only a couple of minutes, and already you can see that gooey kind of thing going on there. You know, and this is a really good sign this cheese is going to taste really good. It's just looking just right. If you look here, you can see all of these like little, it almost looks like veins under skin, but that's Geotrichum. So you've got Geotrichum making these like kind of waves, and then the white Penicillium is sort of covering the top of it. And that's quite a challenging thing to achieve in cheese making, that we have a term we use, which is we call it the waves of joy.
Joy after joy.
It looks like joy as in happiness. So Mark came up with this. We on cheese tasting days, that is like the ultimate like waves of joy. So it looks like waves in the sea, and then if you cut this cheese now and. What we're looking for when we taste the cheese, when you break that cheese, and you can see how the cheese splits, and that where it split was where pieces of curd were put into the cheese mold, and curd hasn't become like one thick piece of curd.
Yeah.
It's still quite fragile, and that's a really good sign that the mold starts breaking down that curd. It's because this is a sign that's saying it's soft. This kind of curd structure only really happens when you make it by hand. You can't achieve this by using machinery because the machine cannot be as gentle as someone by hand. But we've chosen to stay that way because it just makes the cheese better, because you can be very gentle with that curd.
Mm-hmm.
When you put that curd into the hoop, what you're trying to do is not allow that curd to shatter. So it's all about the protein matrix. So the proteins and the are all knitted together, holding together. Inside, around them is fats and whey. and the structure is just locking all that moisture and fat together, leaving this beautiful sort of like ratio of fat, whey and protein for the molds to start breaking down and creating all those flavors. But what happens is if you put the curd into the hoops with force or at the wrong time, the curd breaks. So it gets like hairline cracks in the curd and they break and the moisture then escapes. And you get this imbalance of the right ratio of fat protein whey. This cheese here, it's just got a nice balance of like gooiness and but it still has a little bit of those sort of chalky flavors. Mm.
It's very good. The chalky flavor, it's also fresh. Mm. It's very, very fresh.
Yeah, in a nice way. Yeah. Yeah.
After you take a bite, then it leaves you that umami flavor, which is not necessarily something you associate with this sort of cheese, because usually you think it's very mushroomy.
And vegetable kind of flavors. And yeah, it also has very sort of creamy sort of flavors as well, doesn't it?
Have another one.
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Thank you.
It has a really lovely buttery flavor to it.
Yeah, I like the chalky flavor.
Mm. I mean, the cheese will, as it matures, the flavors will get stronger.
And you can taste, I mean, you can feel in the mouth the individual bits of curd. Mm. As you were saying, you can have just a bit of that on your tongue as you eat the chalky bits. But it's so interesting because I'm used to having this type of cheese as like a customer, like somebody that buys it, I think, when it's a little bit later, like a stage later.
Yeah.
And so you never think that it was tasting like this just a week before.
I know, yeah. Because normally we sell this cheese, the age profile of this cheese about now, so this cheese then spends another week to 2 weeks in like the wholesaler or the retailer.
Yeah.
Before it gets to the end customer. So you don't always get to taste it like this.
Byron by God is actually a pretty young cheese, and by that I don't mean it ages for a little while. Johnny started making it about 10 years ago. He was already farming the land and had his own cows and started selling raw milk to customers to begin with.
Felt like as part of the job I have, like being a farmer and making food, I never got to see like the end part of the chain of like making it to someone actually consuming it. So all of a sudden like that felt complete for me, like was selling raw milk directly from the farmer to the end consumer. It felt really special and it felt like there was a purpose of like us as farmers, that we're not just farmers, we're food producers.
Johnny started making Byron by God in 2013. After doing research and visiting other cheesemakers in the UK, including Joe, the cheesemaker behind Stitcherton that you already met on this channel.
Just saw that and thought, actually, we could be that kind of thing here. You know, we have a farm, we have cows, we are in control of our own milk. And
which is rare for like the dairy
industry. It's not
industry.
That many, yeah. There isn't that many actual farmhouse cheeses.
So why make a French-style cheese here in the UK? Well, you could say he was looking for a challenge, he wanted to fill a gap, topping everything off with a bit of national pride.
There was no British equivalent to Brie de Meaux, and it was the question, why not? Like, why, or like, the UK has come so far with making cheeses in the last 20, 30 years.
So you wanted a challenge to see if you could make it.
Yeah. And also like the British palate has changed so much in the last 20, 30 years, and we are more adventurous as our nation, British people are more adventurous to like more European foods now. And it just seemed like a real opportunity. If we could make a cheese as good as the French Brie, but make it in Suffolk.
This French heritage is actually anything but challenged. In fact, in order to start making Byron by God, Johnny got a French cheesemaker on board to teach him, plus the name Byron by God is much more French than you think.
Our little town where we are right now, on the edge of an old market town called Bungay, And Bungay goes back to the Domesday Book. It's in the Domesday Book with what was created when William the First, William the Conqueror, was around. And William the Conqueror, when he invaded England, he brought with him, he had all his noblemen or barons. And one of them was this guy called Bigod.
Okay, all right, because when I was researching, I was like, it's called Baron Bigod, yeah. Not Bigod.
Yeah, so I think it probably would have been Bigod.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a name known in East Anglia. And we love that idea that this French guy come over and like, you know, there was the connection to France and that name,
yeah.
And our town, Bungay, and the old castle ruins looks out to our fields where the cows graze.
Okay, right.
So Bigod Castle is just over there.
Thank you so much for watching. If you have tried Baron Bigod, please let me know what you think in the comments. I know Johnny will read them and he will really like to know. And if you can get your hands on some, I really recommend. It was such a great discovery for me. I really love this cheese, but most importantly, I love the story behind it. And eating something when you know where it comes from, who makes it, really changes the way that you experience food. I cannot really describe why, but it does that for me, and I hope it does the same for you. Let me know what other cheeses you'd like to learn more about for future episodes. And as always, thank you so much for watching. See you next time.